So well done to everybody that sat through the budget. Thank you for coming back to hear some analysis on it from me and Tom Selby from AJ Bell. We'll talk through the UK ISA, lifetime provider, the value for money stuff, UK investments from pension schemes, Sale and NatWest, the property tax, national insurance cuts, rabbits out the hat, and a bit more. I hope you enjoy it.
When Jeremy Hunt started talking about national insurance and simplification, yeah, I thought we were going to get some kind of combining national insurance and income tax, and we didn't get that, did we? But and I've seen there's been a couple of people suggesting the briefings are that the conservative position is that they want to abolish NI altogether, but you know, when fiscal circumstances allow, etc., which I guess is interesting.
Yeah, no, I thought I was kind of holding my breath a bit there. I thought he might be going down that road. I think others did too. The way he was talking about it, that would have been, you know, more than a rabbit, more of a kangaroo coming out of a hat at the last minute, I think, there. But it wasn't to be. But maybe that's one they'll be coming back to. I mean, it's always, every time they've talked about doing something like that, actually it's turned out to be just so laughably complicated to deliver, they've just backed off again. But
yeah,
here's hoping. It would be great, I think. Life would be better if we only had one form of income tax. But whether it's ever possible to kind of stir the jam back out of the rice pudding or whatever, remains to be seen.
Yeah.
I was also a bit surprised to hear him, you know, fat shaming the leader of the opposition's kind of a new first, isn't it? I was thinking that's getting kind of close to the edge. And I thought, no, really getting close to the edge would have been if he'd done that to Rachel Reeves. That probably would have been a step too far.
Yeah, I'm not sure if even Jeremy Hunt would be brave enough to do that. He's obviously feeling very good about himself for running 17 miles and training for a marathon.
Oh,
I think he clearly needed to shoehorn in that line about Keir Starmer somehow, about losing the pounds. I'm not sure. I don't know, who didn't land particularly effectively in our office. There were a couple of sort of vague titters, but that was about it.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's got a glittering career in stand-up waiting for him when he's finished in the world of politics. So I guess the kind of the headline stuff that got our attention most, and you knew it was coming, didn't you? Did you get a heads up from the Treasury on the UK ISA thing?
So we got a heads up from number 10. It was an interesting insight into the communication or lack of communication potentially between the two departments. As you know, we've been talking to, you know, industry and government and others for the best part of a year about ISA simplification and the idea that we've got too many ISAs and it confuses the market for people, and that ideally we would move to a much simpler framework and potentially a single type of ISA, and, you know, there's debate over that. So we've been having that debate right up to ministerial level. And Andy got a call from the Treasury asking if he'd like to provide a supportive quote for the idea of creating a new UK ISA, which, given that runs completely counter to everything that we've been talking about, and given we've specifically said we don't think that's a particularly good idea, was quite surprising. I think it just shows that even, you know, across lots of, you know, organisations, but even at the highest levels of government, often people don't talk to each other, and that's not ideal, I don't think.
Yes, so no supportive quote was forthcoming from
it. It was not.
So, well, look, let's just quickly run through the details, and then we'll kind of, I mean, I'm interested to talk about the consultation, but, like, key facts: extra £5,000 allowance, got to go into UK investments, and we can talk a bit more about that. Consultation running to 6th of June 2024, which happens to be the 80th anniversary of D-Day, I note. If that's a coincidence or not. And that, you know, again, I was just taking a call from a journalist about this whole pension fund investing in the UK. It's just all about investing in the UK. And I think that, I mean, I'm interpreting this loosely as the economy is FUBAR. I mean, we really, really need to do something to stick some nitrous oxide into the economy. And so we just need investment capital from anywhere we can find it. So we'll just try the ISAs as well. And so it's got to invest in the UK. But then, I mean, I saw you were expressing some skepticism about that. And so we're into a consultation. I mean, the definition of what constitutes a UK investment seems pretty up for grabs as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, so at a fundamental level, we don't think this is a good idea. So I mentioned complexity. We're potentially talking about having seven different types of ISA now rather than six, which I think is a lot by anyone's measure. It's a new limit, a more confusing picture than we had previously. It's quite intellectually incoherent as well. So we've got a government that in the autumn statement said that it was pursuing an agenda of ISA simplification. And, you know, there are, you can argue about whether that was simplification or not, but the government said that's what it intended to do. And then at the subsequent fiscal event, they've announced a new type of ISA. So it seems to me that this government's a long way away from anything that you could possibly describe as long-term thinking. I think that's quite frustrating. I think
if, look, Tom, if you're looking for ideological consistency, I think you're looking in the wrong place.
that's fair comment. I mean, in terms of how effective this is going to be. So, I mean, I've genuinely, as an ISA provider, the Treasury is looking to companies like AJPL and others to distribute this kind of product. But in terms of how effective this is going to be. So we're talking about an extra £5,000 of allowance, right? If every single person who contributed the full £20,000 into an ISA paid the full £5,000 into a UK ISA, depending on how it's defined, etc., you'd be talking about a handful of billion pounds extra at maximum going in to UK companies. Now, given the market capitalisation of UK companies is somewhere in the region of £2 trillion, it's below chicken feed. And I think the reality, and I said this on Twitter, the reality is that lots of people are actually, will inevitably, lots of advised clients in particular, and anyone who's engaged, they'll snap up this extra UK allowance if it comes to be, and then they'll shift their allocation in their stocks and shares ISA in a completely sensible way, and you'll actually end up with exactly the same amount of money in UK companies through ISAs as you have at the moment. So you're adding extra complexity in the way that it's administered, potentially going to be complex as well. And there's potentially going to be zero benefit to UK PLC. So there are lots of reasons why we think it's a bad idea. And we can get into some of the ways in which this might be introduced. But I think another fundamental point, and then I'll stop rabbiting on, mm-hmm. is that you mentioned, so we've got a 3-month consultation. So that takes us to June, I think you said. There'll then need to be time for those consultation responses to be looked at and analysed, and the Treasury to come up with detailed proposals and presumably produce legislation. There is not a cat in hell's chance that we're going to see a UK ISA before a general election. So we can talk about the practicalities of it, but actually this government is almost certainly not going to introduce a UK ISA. So it'll then be to Labour to decide whether they want to go ahead with this or not. And we know that Labour have said in their financial services manifesto, in inverted commas, that they're in favour of ISA simplification. Now, we'll have to see if their version of ISA simplification is the same as the government's, i.e. creating more complexity. But you'd hope if they're genuinely keen on ISA simplification, then there's a possibility that this simply won't see the light of day ever.
So you'll still put in a consultation response, right?
Yes, of course. Yeah. So we will engage constructively with the government, and if this is going to be introduced, then we want it to be introduced in as simple and straightforward a way as possible. But at a basic level, we think it's a pretty bad idea. We don't think it's going to achieve the things that the government wants to achieve. It goes against what they said they were going to do previously in terms of pushing for more simplicity. And it just seems to me to be the definition of a political gimmick that won't achieve anything and potentially will cause some damage as well. So I think, you know, in a way, you would think that the government would be looking to firms like AJBell to be supportive of a proposal like this, because ultimately we're an ISA distributor. So the fact that we're so against something which ultimately is going to create an extra bit of ISA allowance, I think tells you everything you need to know about how daft the proposal is.
Well, okay, I was struck watching the speech, and like you, you know, as we were talking about, occasionally sort of drifting off and going to make myself a cup of tea, you know, like he's still going. But there was a lot that was performative about the whole budget speech, and a lot of it was really about constraining the opposition. This was laying the preparatory ground for a general election campaign. And I mean, things like the non-dom stuff, right? It's just like minimizing Labour's room for maneuver. And something like this is saying, well, we support the British economy. And look, the other thing is, if it comes to pass, if the government comes to me and says, hey, Tom, would you like to put an extra £5,000 in a tax-exempt shelter? I go, yeah, of course. Thank you very much. I'll do that. And you're right. Maybe I'll then get my financial advisor just to kind of rebalance my portfolio elsewhere so that the net effect still got the same exposure to UK equities. But I'll still have an extra £5,000 in an ISA and I'll be happy about that. So there's that. But I think, you know, a lot of the speech really was about trying to make life as difficult as possible for Labour. It was performative policymaking, making life difficult for Labour rather than introducing policies that would materially improve. And I'm being unfair there. I'm sure some of it was intended to improve the UK economy and the loss of the British people, but definitely some of it was pretty cynical. So the consultation itself, the questions they're asking, it's like they really haven't got a clue what they're doing, have they? You know, are we just going to do shares? Are we going to do collectives? Are we going to do gilts? Are we going to do bonds? Are we going to do cash? Oh, we don't know. What do you think? You know, it was a consultation, right?
I agree, yeah. So I would agree as well that I think it's slightly depressing, but I think a large chunk of that budget was as much about setting traps for Labour as it was about ensuring that the British public and public services and the economy is working as it should be. I don't think that's ever an ideal situation. Based on an early reading of the consultation, obviously we're going to have to dig into the detail of it in the coming weeks. It does feel like they really have very little idea about how a UK ISA would be introduced, and perhaps that's because they know that in their heart of hearts that they're not going to introduce it in this parliament, and there's every chance that it won't be a Conservative government that wins when we have a general election. So it might be that they've just thought, we'll just bang out an 18-page consultation because we have to, but actually we've got no intention of doing this. I mean, within that consultation, for example, in terms of some of the things that are slightly messy in there, they suggest that one proposal could be that providers aren't allowed to pay interest on cash in a UK ISA. Obviously, with the aim there of encouraging people who use a UK ISA not to just shove their money in cash, but to invest in companies and in the UK economy as they want to, which makes sense if that's the aim. But it runs slightly counter to what we've been seeing from our colleagues at the FCA on cash and interest margins. So
see what you see, yeah.
Yeah, there's very little joined up thinking going on in all of this. And as you say, I think the reality is that all of this stuff, everything in the, but not just the UK ISA stuff, which actually, you know, while it, you know, I'm passionate about it and it, you know, it matters to companies like AJ Bell and our customers, in terms of a budget, it's kind of a minor footnote. It's not a huge deal for a chancellor to announce that kind of thing. And that's, you know, probably why they're pushing ahead with it. But it just feels like this is a government that's ready for a general election and it isn't necessarily pushing forward with anything that's got a particularly long-term vision, probably because they recognise that the odds are that their own lifespan as a party of government is pretty short.
Well, they're certainly running out of runway. I think, you know, I mean, okay, let's cross our fingers, they say, and hope that interest rates come down and economic growth goes up and the national insurance cuts do get noticed by the voters, and somehow, miraculously, come the autumn, everyone will decide they can still hold their noses and vote for the Conservatives one more time, maybe. Okay, well, look, maybe if neither of us really think this is going to happen, we should move on at this point. The consultation is open until June the 6th, and I'm sure lots of us will send our thoughts in on that. Lifetime provider got a passing mention. I had a bit of a dialogue on Twitter about that with Steve and David Robbins and others, and I think they're right that the statement felt quite equivocal. It's like, we're still doing this, but genuinely we're really not sure whether it's a good idea or not. So, you know, we're just going to keep working through the evidence on that. I mean, personally, I still think it's a good idea, but I'm actually quite pleased that they're taking their time over it and are really looking at the question from all angles, because it is quite a major change the UK pension system if they were to go ahead with it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think you know, an autumn a budget which in all honesty was pretty light on new pension stuff altogether, wasn't it? There were a few updates on things that we're working on, things that the FCA made is going to do in the spring on the pot for life model. And I agree, as we've talked about this before, our view is kind of on the fence at the moment of pot for life. We can see some of the potential benefits, but we can also see some of the potential challenges, particularly for employers. So it makes sense for the government to consider the idea, but to take its time in thinking about all the potential consequences, as you say, of a reform that would have be a significant overhaul of the UK pension system. So that was I didn't read a huge amount into that announcement in inverted commas, because it wasn't much of an announcement either way. I think you would expect a responsible government to be taking its time and considering the views of all parties before introducing something like that. And again, and this is, I'm sure this is going to be a running theme, it's not something that's going to happen in this parliament, so it's going to be for a new government to decide whether or not it wants to go ahead with that. And we all know that the likely new government, nothing's certain, but the likely new government's going to be Labour. And so the question will be, what does Labour want to do around that? And does it share this government's enthusiasm for the idea of a pot for life?
I asked Jill Furness that and she said yes. Interesting.
Okay.
So, I know, right? I was quite surprised because I didn't think it was the kind of policy that would really appeal to Labour. But I think she'd been got at. And but she was quite enthusiastic about the whole idea of the lifetime provider. Having said that, you know, this goes way beyond her pay grade. So Shadow Pensions Minister doesn't get to decide this kind of policy in the end. And it'll be up to Rachel Reeves. But yeah, so the answer to the question when I checked a couple of weeks ago was, yeah, Labour quite liked the idea. So there's that. But there we are, yeah. So we'll just, I mean, that one could just disappear into the long grass and never come out again. And we'll just wait and see where we get to on the other side of the general election. I thought the value for money stuff, you know, he talked about further consultation and it's in the budget documents, you know, consultation to come from the FCA in the spring. This continued squeeze on pension provision, I think, is kind of interesting. And it's got that, it's like a boa constrictor. It's not something, it's just a slow, progressive tightening of the grip. And the metric that they've set there of pension providers having to measure themselves against at least two other pension schemes with £10 billion or more of assets, that's going to be kind of interesting, because that's quite a high bar for pension schemes to have to measure themselves against. You know, if that's your value for money metric, you know, you might find quite a lot of pension schemes, and this applies to contract schemes, it's not just master trusts and the like. And, you know, I wonder whether, if we fast forward a couple of years, you're going to find increasing numbers of pension schemes having to capitulate and give up and consolidate themselves into other schemes because they can't satisfy these value for money requirements.
Yeah, there's potential for that. And I think realistically, actually, I think the government and the regulators are probably quite happy with that as a potential outcome. Regulating, you know, fewer massive schemes will be a lot simpler than regulating lots of small schemes. So, I mean, there's been an agenda of pushing consolidation of what are viewed as subscale schemes, particularly in the workplace arena, for a long time. And I think we're just seeing an acceleration of that. I think the drive towards more disclosure of UK investments, and this slight threat, I thought, within the speech that we're going to push for disclosure of UK investments, and if this doesn't lead to the outcome that we want, which is presumably more money invested in UK PLC, be it through, you know, UK funds or private equity, if it doesn't lead to that outcome, then watch out, because I took the threat to be we might force schemes to invest in a certain way. Now, I personally think that's a dangerous way to go. I know a lot of people are in favour of pushing more UK investment and more exposure to UK PLC. I think if we do move in the direction where a government is telling pension schemes how they need to invest and what their allocation should be, I think that potentially is going to lead to poorer member outcomes. No guarantees there, of course, but potentially there's the risk that, you know, people's money will be invested in a way that is suboptimal versus having the, you know, their existing exposure to overseas investments and all the rest of it. And I think it's just, it feels like something we need to, as an industry, we need to keep a close eye on, because you edge towards disclosure, and then if the government doesn't get what it wants, then you potentially edge towards the government saying we're going to force you to do things. And once we're getting into a situation where the government's telling people how to invest, well, we know government records in terms of investments and picking investments not always particularly good. And my worry is that the member, the end saver, will be ultimately forgotten in all this, and actually we'll end up with a world where the drive is to get more money invested in the UK rather than for people to get as big a pension as they can possibly get at retirement, which I think most people that will be their priority.
Yeah, I find that really interesting, and I was having a bit of an exchange on Twitter with Joe Cumber about this.
Mm.
I started off when we had the Mansion House speech last summer, I kind of agreed with everything you just said. I'm increasingly sympathetic that it's actually, I hate myself for saying this, I think, because I agree with you, the government shouldn't be telling people where to invest. At the same time, you know, every time I look at numbers like, you know, debt to GDP ratio or the demographics or per capita economic growth, you know, I just think, oh my God, the economy really is FUBAR. We really are in a hole here. We really do have a problem. We really do need to find ways to stimulate economic growth. So, you know, it's all very well saying, well, I'm going to invest my pension fund in the way that's optimal for me. But if we're all suffering declining standards of living, if the economy is going backwards, then actually nobody wins. So I kind of agree with you at the same time, and I appreciate there's a degree of cognitive dissonance here. I'm actually also quite sympathetic to this imperative that we do need to stimulate more economic growth. We do need to think more creatively about how we manage the economy. And again, I hate myself for saying that very phrase. You know, I want a small government, but this is serious stuff. And if we don't look for new solutions, then we face long-term economic decline, and that benefits no one. You know, so I think you're right about what you said. That the government's attention is, look, do it voluntarily, or we'll come back and find nasty ways to make you do this, and no one wants that. So just, and that's why we had the Mansion House speech last summer, and we had various schemes at the time saying, "Yeah, I will sign up."
They're fair points, and I guess one of the challenges with that approach is it's almost the government, and we could have an entire podcast on this, I suspect, it's almost the government abrogating its own responsibility to create the conditions for the economy to be successful and grow in the future. And it's almost a suggestion that actually we've tried every possible, you know, labour market reform and pro-companies reform and tax reduction and all the rest of it that could get the economy motoring. And I'd argue that there are many, 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 many things that the government hasn't tried and that future governments haven't tried. And the worry, I suppose, would be that if governments think that they can just shove a load of pension money into the UK economy, and that's somehow just going to automatically mean we're more productive and we grow faster, it may help, but it may not, rather than dealing with fundamental challenges of, you know, getting more people back into work, of improving the education system and all the rest of it. So I think there's a, I can understand the imperative, I do, but I worry that there's a sense of giving up and potentially failing to really consider some of the fundamental problems that our economy faces, and actually the better way, the ideal way to deal with the problems the UK's got in terms of productivity is ensuring that the conditions exist to make us a more productive economy, rather than forcing people's pension money into an economy which isn't that productive. And actually, if it continues to be unproductive, then they'll end up with suboptimal returns versus where their money would be otherwise. But I concede that it's a difficult problem, and I understand that politicians are probably close to the end, to the bottom of their ideas bucket in terms of how to solve it.
I cannot add to that. It's really good, Tom. Okay, so a couple of other things that caught my eye. Back to the budget, NatWest privatisation. Presumably, AJ Bell are quite pleased about that.
Yes, as expected. So we'll wait to see, you know, when it happens. But you'd expect every major platform to be involved in the share sale when it does happen. Hopefully this summer. So yes, it's a good thing. And there's, you know, various things that investors will need to consider as always when there's a share sale of this nature. But yes, I think it'll be a positive thing, and I think hopefully it'll generate some excitement around that particular company over the summer, although I'm sure lots of people have better things to do over the summer than consider the NatWest share sale.
And he did say, you know, if market conditions allow, so, you know, there's kind of it does rather depend on factors outside.
Another thing from this budget which may not happen under this government's term, unfortunately, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah, also the residential property tax cut for investment properties, and I did look at that and think, okay, if that, you know, lots of jokes about the last laughers on them or something, and the reduction in the tax rate will stimulate more tax revenue and more transactions, and if it persuades people to sell that second property that's perhaps becoming a questionable investment now anyway, and then they can take that money and reinvest it on the AJLBOL platform, and that's going to be good news for you guys, hasn't it?
Well, it'd be a fantastic decision if they did that, and that's not financial advice. But we'll see. I mean, so I think we're talking about a four basis point cut in the tax rate. It may make a difference. It may not. We'll see about that. I guess it'll be interesting. Clearly, the government wants to stimulate the property market where it possibly can, and wants to stimulate transactions as part of this plan to get the economy growing. So it may make a difference. I mean, this is a really minor point. Feel free to cut this out. I always find it frustrating when tax rates aren't put to round numbers, or at least vague integers like 25% or 20%. Going from 28% to 24% was deeply unpleasing for me. I much prefer it when we have tax rates that are round numbers.
Offends your sense of order, does it?
I'm a simple man, Tom. I'm a simple man from the north, and I can't handle anything but a round number.
I can tell you from first-hand experience, people up here are anything but simple. you must have been delighted then at the abolition of the lifetime allowance of £1,073,100 there.
Very much so. I find it incredibly difficult to say that number. I find myself starting to say it, and then you did it beautifully there, and I won't try and repeat it. But that has to be the oddest of the odd numbers. Yes, obviously, AJ Bellas and many others have campaigned for a long time for simplification of both pensions and ISAs, and we've always felt that the lifetime allowance punishes people for doing the right thing and saving for the future, and it adds huge complexity to the system. Although the system that's coming in is pretty complicated as well, unfortunately. We're definitely in favour of that remaining in place, and obviously some concerns about exactly what Labour's going to do and whether it will stick to its pledge to reintroduce the lifetime allowance. Our current expectation is that they will do that, and the question will be the level at which the lifetime allowance is introduced. But we'll have to wait to see the detail on that. I think it was a positive thing, but there was a story in The Sun, of all places, by Laura Perkis.
She's got Labour, a good budget. Yeah.
Very good budget. Yeah, it seems like they've backed away from the idea of creating a carve-out for public sector schemes, which I think that's a good thing. It would be deeply unfair for public sector workers who have generally more generous pensions than their private sector counterparts to also not be covered by the lifetime allowance, while DC schemes were. And again, in terms of complexity, that's clearly a more complex system than we have at the moment. So it's good that they've moved away from that. Ideally, they would move away from this idea of reintroducing the lifetime allowance, because the idea of creating some sort of protection regime for people who've acted between now and it being reintroduced just makes my head explode. And I've been studiously avoiding the detail of this and allowing Rachel Vay, my excellent colleague, to do it, because frankly, it's mind-numbingly complicated as it is. It is introducing the new lump sum death benefits allowances. So if we move to that regime and then back to a lifetime allowance regime, I have got no idea what that would look like, but it wouldn't be pretty.
Deeply nauseating. Yeah, yeah. I liked Alistair Cunningham's take on this, which is that Labour will lift the lid and decide that it is indeed just too complicated to bring the lifetime allowance back. So what they'll do instead is bring pension funds into the inheritance tax regime.
Yeah, that's possible. And I think a lot of providers are probably reasonably pragmatic about these things. So we've always said that you've got an annual allowance that exists that is a really simple mechanism to help you control the amount of tax relief that you spend. And it seems to me that a much more logical way of doing what they're trying to achieve is simply to reduce the annual allowance if they want to do that. I think there's a reasonable debate to be had about the pensions death tax regime, which is pretty generous. There's, again, you're still going to have the problem, and you always have this problem, and I think we've discussed this before, of what do you do about people who've made decisions based on that regime. And I'm sure there'll be people who have transferred out of defined benefit schemes, for example, because of the death benefits regime, who, if you introduced it blanket and said there's IHT going to apply, then they would have a legitimate complaint at the government doing something that feels retrospective. So I don't, as always, none of these things are easy, but I think that I'm sure lots of providers, including AJ Bell, will be open to conversations with a Labour government, if we get a Labour government, as to how to do some to achieve the aims of introducing the lifetime allowance without doing it, because I think that would be the worst of all worlds.
Yeah, Rachel and Andy Tully and people like that would be just crying themselves to sleep at that one.
I hope outside work they've got better things to do than think about the lifetime allowance. Although in the case of Rachel Vay and Andy Tully, I suspect that that chat over the dinner table is slightly more common than amongst most couples.
So just bringing it around full circle, we got the rabbit out of the hat that definitely wasn't a kangaroo of the national insurance cuts, and I guess they're coming in a month, which must be sending payroll and HR departments into a tailspin as we speak, and has some interesting implications for salary sacrifice and will cause a bit of a re-evaluation there. I know a lot of employers still don't do salary sacrifice, which I just think is astonishing, because it's effectively free money for their employees, but all that's going to have to be recalculated. I think other than that, it's a few hundred pounds extra into most people's pay packets from April, and we'll probably all be grateful for that because we all need it. I don't think there's much to add on that one, is there?
I don't think so. I'm not sure if it does it count as a rabbit out of a hat if the rabbit was already revealed in the Financial Times and the Times and various other places the day before. I'm not sure.
And put in a pie already, hadn't it?
It certainly makes mine and my colleagues' jobs on budget day a lot easier when almost every single item within that budget has already been pre-released in the previous week or so. You can kind of I genuinely don't think I've, in terms of, you know, doing press reaction and all the rest of it, I don't think I've had a more relaxing budget day than I had today, because there were no big surprises. I think the move on national insurance makes sense. Clearly, there are fiscal constraints, and I think that's, you know, going for the double whammy of having one national insurance cut happen in January and then one happen in April means that people will feel it in their pay packets, and the government will be hoping that they haven't noticed that as their earnings have gone up, their tax bills have gone up at the same time, while they will notice this. So I think it makes sense politically for the government, but whether it'll make any difference at a general election, whether it'll move the dial, I'm not sure. I'm sure we'll get lots of opinion polls today which suggest that not a huge amount has moved, but that's been the case for the Conservative Party for quite a long time now.
And in the meantime, we can come back, do it all again in the autumn ahead of the next general election.
So. Please, no. We're not. Are we going to have an autumn statement? Let's not do that. Let's just move to a general election, and then we can. I always say, was it Barbara or whoever it was? Not another one. Let's just not another autumn statement. Yeah. Give me the general election rather than the autumn statement, and let's move on either with, you know, a shock Conservative victory and a revitalised Rishi Sunak, or a new Labour government and some different ideas. Either of those options is preferable to me than another major fiscal event in a few months' time.
On that note, thank you very much, Tom Selby.
Thanks, Tom.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you did, then do please consider leaving a positive review and maybe even subscribing for future episodes. The sound engineer was Ross Burns. Thank you for listening.